John Hansen here. On Wednesday, I tuned in, as I always do, didn't hear Terry Savage, was bummed out, then excited to find out that she was coming on Friday when I was hosting. I'm sure that wasn't part of the decision-making process, Terry, but it's good to have you on. The Money Lady, how are you?
We don't have a lot of time, but I want to share with you some of the most interesting research that I have come across my desk.
Okay.
And it's a perfect time to share it. You know I don't call the stock market tops and bottoms. It's not my game.
Nope.
Believe you got to be there. But I also believe that when you get to a certain stage in life, you want to be a little more conservative, like when you're no longer contributing. So here we are with the Dow within 150 points or so of its all-time high. All-time high, 41,585, currently around 41,400, so close. And Dennis Gartman, the great analyst who no longer writes a daily letter, put something out today. Picture, if you will, a chart that's going off the charts. And he includes it in his newsletter, a chart that put together by J.P. Morgan Chase. And what it details is the level of public participation in the U.S. stock market. It shows the percentage of total financial assets, that would include homes and bank accounts and money markets and so forth, the total percentage of financial assets that the public holds in equities, stocks. And it is now at the highest level in modern history, post-World War II. The public presently holds 42% of its financial assets in equity stocks. That, he notes, is well above the previous peak on this chart, 38%. And when did we get that high? In late 1999, just before that high-tech dot-com bubble burst. And by the way, how low could the percentage go in a bear market? Well, at that point, the percentage fell to a mere 18% of total financial assets. The bear market just wiped out. The Dow, I think, is in that bear market was down about 50%. So, I mean, yes, we've come back. So this is not a doom and gloom story. It's only doom and gloom if you're planning to live on that money in your retirement.
Right.
So the point I'm making here in this full credit to Dennis Gartman and the J.P. Morgan Chase chart, I'm going to try and put this up on my website at terrysavage.com. The fact is that the public is as highly invested in stocks now as they have been in a long time. And by the way, he notes that before that, the previous peak was 30% in the late 60s, just before that horrendous bear market that took the Dow also down 50% in 72 to 74. So it's just kind of a warning. Everybody's got a 401k. That's part of the reason people have a lot of stocks. Now they're participating. But a lot of it is just the enthusiasm for stocks as we reach the peak. And maybe you want to just have a little more chicken money on the side, just based on history.
Terry, you were talking about the stock market approaching all-time highs again, and not issuing a warning, just simply an observation that as more people get into the market in the past, that has resulted in, shortly after there's sometimes been a bear market that follows. Not necessarily that quid pro quo, that one causes the other.
History says that when the market goes to extremes, you want to be very, very careful.
So then what do you do with that? Like, if you have had gains of 20 or 30% over the last 1 or 2 years, you're 59 or 60 years old, you still want to make money. You don't want to like tear everything out. Like, where do you go with that
money? If it were easy, no. If it were that easy, believe me, I mean, we wouldn't be sitting on the radio debating it. The markets wouldn't exist if you knew exactly what to do. But you get to a stage in life where market declines are no longer an opportunity for you because your $300 a month for your 401k now buys a lot more shares at cheaper prices. It's when you look at that and say, oh, we're going to live on this for the rest of our life, that you need to be a little more conservative. And I'm just pointing out that an incredible indicator, the percentage of stocks, of public finances held in stocks is just at an all-time high. Hey, look, at gold's at an all-time high. Take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Russia just announced it's buying 8 times as much gold as it had been recently, increasing its gold purchases from 1.1 billion rubles a day to 8.2 billion rubles a day. So we've got gold up at all-time highs. Stuff's going on in the world, and you just don't want to sit there floating along on the river of happiness to your detriment if in case things turn around.
I guess I mean, like, well, what do you do then? Do you take a percentage?
Well, you take a look at your 401k right now and say, you know, at this stage of my life, what is a more conservative option inside? Is it a very short-term bond fund where, you know, I might make a little money if interest rates go down? We're right near all-time highs. So again, I never thought I could time the market, but I certainly know that emotionally, it's very devastating to watch a market go down 10, 20, 30, 40, or even 50% when you don't have time on your side. So you take a look at what your alternatives are inside your 401k. If you're already retired, you say, maybe I better roll over my 401k into an IRA where I do have choices like a treasury-only money market fund for a good portion of it.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was, yeah. There are options for people. I feel like people just kind of like let it sit there and go, I put it on a target date fund. It's going to be conservative enough.
Go to terrysavage.com, put in the words target date. I put in a column recently. Many of those funds are very highly invested because, okay, these are the financial metrics. You're going to live a long time and you're going to need money. And the stock market outperforms inflation historically. But you may have a much larger exposure to stocks than you think. And your target date fund won't protect you in a bear market the way having some money market fund on the side might.
I know that this is a very specific question, an individual, depending on when you want to retire. But at what point do you really start like looking under the hood to make sure you are okay at retirement? Is it 5 years, 10 years out? Like, do you have like a kind of an idea in your head?
I actually have a wonderful plan. My good friend and partner in the Social Security Horror Stories book, Larry Kotlikoff, has a wonderful website called Max Fi Planner. And that one of my most recent columns details how it works. And I think you start doing that in your 40s and 50s. It's a unique way of doing financial planning that I won't take up a whole half hour to explain here, but the column is right up at terrysavage.com.
773 says, love your program with Miss Terry. Oh, how formal. I like that. The money lady, as we say, what's a better idea? I have my 401k plans with three different employers. Is it better to roll them all into my present employer's 401k plan or an IRA plan? Thank you so much.
If you go to terrysavage.com and put the words rollover now in the search box in the column, it will show you how to do a direct rollover to an IRA rollover where you don't take the money, but you move it from your old 401k custodian into a new IRA. You can roll a couple of old 401ks into one IRA rollover account, sort out where you want to be exposed to the market, what mutual funds you want to buy. You'll have a much broader choice. It'll be a lot easier for record keeping. And one day down the road when you're 73 and you have to start taking distributions, it'll make it a little easier to calculate those. So yes, I'd take the old 401ks and roll them into an IRA rollover account. At a place like Fidelity or Vanguard, you do not have to sign up for investment advice. They have asset allocation advice. They have a wide variety of mutual funds. So this does not require any help. You can do this on your own.
Can I just put one caveat in there, Terry, that I'm sure you'll agree with? When you guys roll over into IRA, I've done this before with old employers, or if you open up a new IRA or an HSA or whatever you want to do with a Fidelity or Vanguard, whatever, please just make sure you don't forget the step of hitting the invest button and putting it in one of these things that you say. Terry, I've heard from people that put money in cash, they let it sit there thinking it was working just being in that account.
Well, maybe they want, but part of the thing is you might want to do a rollover and not be forced into all in the stock market.
100%.
So you'll have a choice. You'll have money market funds. You'll have equity income funds, more conservative funds that go for income as well as stock growth. So you can divide up. If you want to be all in the stock market, just buy the Standard & Poor 500 stock index fund or the total stock market index fund. There'll be a group of funds. Diversify, but yes, pay attention to what's inside your plan, especially now as we hit these market peaks. Also understand how you'd feel if there have been bear markets. I've lived through three that took the Dow down 50% because I've been around for a while. I'm here to talk about it, and I'm still glad I have a nice allocation to stocks. That's not the point. But I know what a sickening feeling it is when you say, wait, where did all the money go? And as I've said many times, an old trader told me back in 74 when I was a young trader on the floor of the options exchange, and I looked it up and the market was going down and all the stocks were going down. And I said, Paul, but where did all the money go? And he said, well, my dear, it went to money heaven.
Yeah, I only brought that up because, Terry, I've had two listeners call onto my show, which means there's more that have done this, that were trying to invest the money. They put it in there thinking that that automatically did it by just transferring the money. They went back 5 or 10 years later, hadn't moved, and they were very disappointed. So just make sure you finish the equation if you want. I got a text from the 773. Does Terry know if there are any financial investment classes for women who are just starting to learn about long-term investing?
Gee, there, you know, I worry about people going to those luncheon seminars that are aimed at women, because those are usually typically sales pitches. But all of the community colleges offer investment classes. You can go online. Elevest, which is a wonderful site about finances for women. There are just so many resources online. Gosh, I think my book is still on sale, The Savage Truth on Money. It's the most recent edition is 4 years old, but the basic truths are absolutely the same about dealing with how do you understand the stock market and valuations and so forth. So there's plenty of information out there. You just do a little digging.
All right. I got to ask this really quickly. You got to answer it really quickly. This texter is 65, a homemaker for most of her married life. She started collecting Social Security at 70. Her husband's about to do that, too. And they'll have a nice Social Security check. If he dies before me, can I choose who check I get to collect?
You will get the largest check.
Okay.
You'll get your benefit plus some of his if it is larger.
Okay. That was well done, money lady. Love that. TerrySavage.com.
Thanks, John.
As always, good to chat with you. Okay, take care.
Thank you.
I think we've all been there, especially if you live out in the suburbs and you're craving some of that fine culinary experiences that you miss in the city, but you still want to eat it at home, and you plug it into whatever app there is. And of course, you're not in the range of that restaurant to deliver to you, so you can either drive in to go get it or get something else until Dwell Social came along. This is cool. Alan Shulman started it during the pandemic, I believe. Alan, hello. Welcome back to WGN.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and Dwell Social kind of connects the dots between restaurants in the city and homes in the suburbs, yeah?
Yeah, it's, you know, for someone like me who lives in the suburbs, we live so close to this great city, one of the greatest cities in the world, and yet it's really hard to take advantage of the great food scene down in Chicago, and we kind of figured out a way to make it work.
Who did you start with first?
Well, it's a funny story. During COVID, I was craving great pizza, and so I happened to call Pequod's, and I asked them if I could get enough people to place an order, would they bring their pizzas to Northbrook? And they told me if you can get 10 people to place an order, we would go ahead and do that.
And lo and behold,
they did it, yeah, in a second. And then the events continued to grow and grow with Pequod's, and people from all the other communities outside of Chicago kept asking us if we would do it in their community. And I mean, that was kind of our jump start. And that was our realization that the demand was really there, not just for Pequod's, but for so many of Chicago's great other restaurants.
Yeah, Pequod's kind of gave you what would make this ultimately work, right? There has to be enough demand, and it has to be going to a similar area, which is kind of how now you've modeled this to work. This isn't just I can just pick up an app or call you guys and you get anything anywhere. There's sort of some specific times and locations, right?
Yeah, I mean, everything we do is based on efficiency. We have to make the process of delivering food super efficient or the economics don't work, right? So for us, if we can get those 10 or 15 orders placed and all those orders are going to, we call them suburban zones, all these suburban zones we've established throughout the Chicago area, suddenly now one driver can start making multiple deliveries in a very timely manner, and lo and behold, the economics work beautifully. The more we scale, the more efficient we become, the better the economics look.
Food's traveling a while now. I think it goes between two different drivers' hands, or maybe it's all one driver, but it is a long distance. What about the quality of the product?
I mean, that's the coolest thing, because unlike a lot of the other food delivery platforms, all of our food is intended to be finished at home, which doesn't mean it's going to take a half an hour, but all of the chefs that we work with have looked at the food that they're creating, and they provide instructions on exactly how they want our customers to finish the food, to reheat the food. And so when they're eating the food, it's actually hot and delicious. We do surveys all the time, right? We've actually heard from people that from their perspective, the quality of the food is actually as high as it can be because it's hot when they're eating it because of the directions they follow.
The app is called Dwell Social. Alan Shulman on the line with us now. You know, part of me, when I first read about this, thought, yeah, but I like to know I don't, I'm going to pick what I want to eat in that moment. I like to, you know, scroll through and see what I want to eat. And then I said to myself, no, you don't like doing that. In fact, you and Enrique spend an hour arguing and trying to figure out what to get. There's almost a sort of genius about, well, here's where we're working with today. Here's where you can get it. And that almost simplifies the process a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes when there's too many choices, you drive yourself crazy, right? And there is something else which we've learned, and that is that if you take the time to plan ahead, and people can still order between like 10 and 12 on the day that we're making the deliveries, but if you plan ahead, it's a huge load off your back because now you know what you're doing for dinner for yourself, for your family, for your friends, whatever it might be. And there's something really nice about that, waking up in the morning and saying, oh, you know what? Dinner's all done. It'll be brought to me. I don't have to do anything. So most of the people who use Dwell Social quite a bit, I think, have learned how wonderful that process really is.
Okay, so then, yeah, walk us through that process. You open up the app, and what do you see? What do you do?
Yeah, you'll open up the app, and you'll see all of our restaurants that are on platform and when they're coming to your area. And, for example, if you're looking to do some tapas in Cafe Bob Riba, one of the original tapas restaurants in Chicago, is coming to your place, let's say, on next Thursday, you simply click on that event, we call it, and there's the Cafe Bob Riba menu. You place your order, and lo and behold, you'll get a reminder the day before to say, don't forget, you ordered. And we literally will deliver that food to your door on the day that you scheduled that delivery to take place.
Is it usually one restaurant one day, or are there multiple restaurants on multiple days and areas?
Yeah, so we've been growing, and so sometimes you'll see two restaurants coming to the same suburban zone. So our driver will go to one restaurant and then to another restaurant and then bring both restaurants to that area. And I think that's going to continue to happen. We'll be able to provide more choice for our suburban customers as we continue to grow.
Not too much, though. Seriously, Alan, just leave it at one or two. I'm already picturing that conversation. Okay, what zones do you have covered? I know you're in 56 suburbs. I don't know if that's changed since the article that I'm reading here. But is it a scattershot all over the place? Is it predominantly north and northwest? Give me a little rundown.
I mean, we're literally from, like, you know, Orland and Tinley Park all the way up to Libertyville, Highland Park, Hinsdale, Naperville. I mean, we really have spread ourselves around the suburbs and created these zones, again, focused on efficiency. So there's a really large, there's a really big chance that if you live in the suburbs, we'll be able to order through Dwell Social. We'll be able to bring food to you.
I just want to make sure I understand. So if it's Pequod's, let's just use that as an example. Do you have Pequod's on that specific day? Let's say it's tonight. It's Friday. Do they go to all the zones and then anyone can order the Pequod's that night? Or do you have to match up the restaurant and it happens to have to come to your specific zone that day?
That's correct. I mean, these are special kind of opportunities for you. So we will, let's say, have Pequod's going to Northbrook today, and we'll have Pequod's going to Naperville on Sunday, and we'll have Pequod's going to Hinsdale, you know, the following Wednesday, things like that. And that's the same with all of our restaurants. So, and that's, again, what makes us so efficient, because now, let's say, Manny's Deli knows that we're going to be picking up from their restaurant, and we're going to be taking it to the Naperville area. It's for them, it's like doing a big catering order, right? And so they'll just prepare all of our food. Our driver will show up between like 2:30, 3 o'clock, something like that. And then he or she will head over to Naperville and start making the deliveries door to door.
Let's say it's a $30 order. How much more on top? Because we've done so many stories on these other apps, the delivery apps. You get a $30 order, it ends up costing $57, and who knows how much the driver gets of that. Give me a little like a mathematics here for how much the driver's going to get, how much that order is going to ultimately cost me.
Yeah, we've tried to keep it super simple. So we charge what we call a $5 reservation fee. And that's what we started with out of COVID. We just started charging $5 to join this event. And then we charge 18%. And that 18% includes the driver's tips. We don't even have a place for you to tip the driver because we don't think it's fair for the drivers to have to rely on tips when they're spending money on gasoline and they're spending their time driving to these suburban locations. So that 18% allows us to pay our drivers what we believe is a very fair wage. And as we've learned, is actually higher than they're going to, you know, more than they're going to make on an Uber app or working for some of those other companies. And it's guaranteed that they're going to get X amount of money, depending on how long that they'll be working. So That's it. It's a super simple model. We don't mix fees in with taxes. We don't do any of that. It's just $5 plus 18%, which is kind of like a tip. We call it a delivery service fee. And that's all.
I love that you don't even have another tip optional. I mean, I'm sorry for drivers out there, but everyone would feel, a lot of people would feel guilty enough and not know whether they're supposed to tip more or not. I like that it's simple. I'm glad the drivers are hopefully well compensated, as you mentioned. Alan, we're out of time. It's cool. It's Dwell Social. It's an app. I'm downloading it now. Good to meet you, and good luck with this, okay?
Thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
That's awesome. Dwell Social. Okay, time for the Wintrust Business Minute. Here is Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines and SpaceX are taking in-flight connectivity to new heights. They're bringing Starlink's Wi-Fi service to United's mainline and regional air fleet. Testing begins early next year. The first passenger flights could have it soon after, and it'll be free. J.P. Morgan and Bank of America are putting new measures in place to help keep junior staffers from working too many hours. Morgan is starting an 80-hour weekly cap. B of A is going to start a timekeeping system to monitor hours worked. This after allegations that junior bank staffers were pressured to falsify hours. Deloitte is out with its first holiday spending forecast. They say that while retail sales will increase by over 3%, that's down from 4% in 2023. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Steve Alexander with the Business of Food.
Yeah, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Let's begin by dusting off this one from 1972.
You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road.
But we're talking about live skunks and in the middle of Mr. Fizz's lawn.
Stinking to high heaven.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out more at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Mr. Fizz walks out in the morning and sees skunks have plowed up his yard.
Actually, when the skunks get in to dig up your yard the way they do it, they can do a real number on your yard very quickly. They dig holes, and these holes will be maybe 4 inches in diameter where, you know, it'll look like it had been plowed, and they're digging up grubs. They're just looking for something to eat.
Were you surprised to see your lawn had been plowed up by the skunks?
It was a surprise to me because we hadn't had a grub problem, and I had not seen any adults. These are the June bugs or May beetles or the Japanese beetles. Just assumed that we were not going to have a problem. We have had quite a problem this year with them.
So what's the battle plan?
Well, at this point, Dilox, which is an insecticide that's quick-acting, that will stop them. It'll kill the bugs. And if you kill the bugs, the skunks are not going after them.
Okay, well, that's it for skunk talk. What else is on your mind, sir?
Well, we're in a drought. Actually, they say it's abnormally dry, but it's really dry here. The last time we got a good rain was about 3 to 4 weeks ago, and we have had nothing since then. Just spots of it, a little bit, a tenth here, maybe a couple of tenths there. Not enough to keep things going. We need to get some water out on the big stuff that's going to be very difficult if it dies off, and we need to replace it. This would be big trees. The next would be newly planted trees, and after that, shrubs and so forth. Lawns can go dormant. You need to put about a quarter of an inch of water on there every couple of weeks to keep them from dying, even if they're dormant. When we get into the fall, we need to make sure that these plant materials do not go into the winter in a droughty condition, because the roots are going to continue to try to grow if they're not frozen. And they're going to need the moisture. If they don't have moisture, they'll die.
Yeah, we don't want that. Thank you, sir. On the food calendar, it's National Peanut Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Zarkowski is going to bring me back to life. She's from the events manager and program manager for the Greater Ravenswood Chamber of Commerce. And Amy, it's a big weekend for you guys. I've done this. The Ravenswood artwork is incredible. You guys excited for the weekend?
Yes, we are. Thank you so much. I was just hearing about the drought previously on the segment, and you know, it's fine with me.
Yes.
But I definitely want it to start raining Monday on.
Yes, Saturday and Sunday. Let's leave it nice and dry for the 10,000 or so people that make it to this every year, huh?
Yes, we have a lot of great things going on over the weekend, and we have a really big footprint, not only an outdoor arts market with 60-plus artists, but we also have open studios, galleries, manufacturers, and other businesses along Ravenswood Avenue between Lawrence and Irving Park, so you can make an entire day or weekend of it. There's definitely a lot to do.
Paint a picture for us here on the radio. You walk in, you look at the ahead of you, and what do you see?
You're going to see, if you're looking down Ravenswood Avenue, there's going to be little spots here and there where you're going to see an Art Walk logo with a little QR code, so you know that that building is going to be participating in the Art Walk. You're going to be able to go in, scan the QR code, and just make sure that you know exactly what business you're going to be seeing there. And if you're going to walk a little bit farther down Ravenswood over to Berteaux, you're going to see a street festival there with Beguile Beer, a non-alcoholic beverage tent that benefits the Friendship Center. You're going to see a bunch of tents with artists, two different stages, and we're going to have a bunch of guidebooks that are printed out there for you, so that if you're not going to want to be looking at your phone the entire time, you can grab one of those guidebooks, and it's going to have all the information for all the stops along Art Walk, so you can know exactly where you're going. There's also a little map in there, so you can orient yourself properly.
All right, that's one of the senses. That's what we're seeing, hearing, and tasting too as part of the experience, huh?
Yes. So hearing, we're going to have two stages. The one on the south end of the street festival, that's going to be over at Belle Plaine and Ravenswood. We're going to have a bunch of different Chicago artists, such as the Parsnips Factory, Flor de Piel, Lydia Cash, a lot of really great local artists. And then on the north end, you're going to see a stage in the parking lot that is over at Ravenswood and Berteaux. That's going to have Rendezvous Arts. They are a fantastic group of musicians, and they're going to have more classical music. So if you want a little bit more chill time, go over to the north end, grab yourself a beer, sit down and relax in one of our shaded seating areas, or you can go down to the southern end and you can get a little bit more of a beat, a little bit more excitement down there. And of course, you can bring your beer down there as well. And then you'll, as you're tasting your beer, maybe you'll get a little bit hungry. We're going to have various food trucks and food vendors for you to choose from. So you can get something sweet, you can get something savory. You're going to be able to find anything that you like. And just like I said earlier, if you are not interested in drinking that day, if you're not a drinker, totally cool. We're going to have non-alcoholic beverages available. All the proceeds go right back to the Friendship Center food pantry. So you know it's going to go somewhere that's very important in the neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely. Amy Zarkowski, got about a minute left. Okay, let's just talk about how not only is this fun for you, what a big moment this is for artists who are, it helps them too.
Yes, it really does. This is going to be a great experience for you to see the artists who work inside the community, and you can actually go into their space and see their studios yourself, which is not something that you can typically do. For example, we have Anne Luke, who's going to be right up at Ravenswood and Lawrence. Her studio typically closed off to people, but you're going to be able to go in there, see everything that she does, and just get an experience of what it's like to be in an artist space, work-live space, or just a workspace here in the neighborhood.
Love it. It's the 22nd annual Ravenswood Artwork Saturday and Sunday, put on by the Greater Ravenswood Chamber of Commerce. Website people can go to, Amy?
Yeah, you can go to ravenswoodchicago.org. Right there on the front page, there's going to be a button that you can press to get to the Art Walk webpage itself. And we also have an online registry of all of the different businesses that are participating.
Love it.
You can get all your information there.
Love it. Have a great weekend. Great weather. Enjoy, okay?
Thank you so much. Take care.